Awesome. Well, thanks so much for being here. I'm Zach. I'm a 20 here at Dartmouth and a founding member and the president of the Dartmouth Undergraduate Research Association. I'm thrilled to welcome our guest today, President Hanlon, whom many of you undoubtedly know, and as a speaker on our Dartmouth Undergraduate Research Association podcast series. President Hanlon is a Phi Beta Kappa graduate of Dartmouth, class of 1977, and received his doctorate from Caltech. He's an impressive administrator and scholar and was the provost and Donald J. Lewis Professor of Mathematics at the University of Michigan. He came back to Hanover to become Dartmouth's 18th president in the Wheelock succession in 2013. In addition to his role as president, he continues to teach both Math 11 and a QSS course on sports analytics, underscoring his own personal continued commitment to undergraduate education as Dartmouth's president. Today, the Dartmouth Undergraduate Research Association is thrilled to be virtually sitting down with President Hanlon and getting his take on his experiences with research at all stages of his career, from undergraduate to president. Thanks so much, President Hanlon, and for being here, and I think we're ready to dive in.
All right. Thank you, Zach.
Yes. So just to kind of get us situated and to start off, can you describe a little bit where your interest in mathematics stems from, and how you came to specialize specifically in combinatorics and probability?
Sure, happy to do that. And it's kind of an interesting story. I started out freshman year taking courses in the calculus sequence. I took Math 5, which I think may be called Math 8 now. Took Math 13, didn't like either of them, didn't do very well at either of them. And I was ready to sort of give up on taking math classes. But my advisor, my freshman advisor, was a math professor, and he said, before you give up, try this combinatorics and graph theory course. It's really different than calculus. And so I did that in my spring term freshman year, and I just loved it. I loved it from the very moment the class started. I said, this stuff is so cool. And I ended up following that with research with one of the professors who had taught the class, and continued on taking as many math classes as I could after that.
Amazing. And can you expand a little bit more on any research you did as an undergraduate at the college, as a research assistant or senior thesis? Sure. And what were opportunities for that sort of stuff back then? Like, I mean, obviously we have a very robust infrastructure now with UGAR and Dura, but what was back in the 70s?
So I think it was more departmentally organized back then. I don't remember UGAR being in place, but I did have lots of opportunities. The faculty were very interested, as they are today, in working with undergrads on research. My first foray was as part of an NSF grant that one of the faculty members, Bob Norman, had. I was part of a team working on an NSF sponsored research project. I then went on to work with Professor Norman on additional research leading to a senior honors thesis. And as a matter of fact, the work I did as an undergrad, the research work I did, led to three solo publications, which came out after I graduated.
That's incredible.
So there were lots of opportunities. It was really, as today, the faculty were very interested in it. I think it was more departmentally based.
And can you expand a little bit on your relationship with your thesis advisor? I mean, it sounds like he or she was very impactful on your senior thesis and your overall.
I worked very closely with Professor Norman, also with some of the other faculty members that were in combinatorics at the time, Ken Bogart, Joanne Hutchinson. I think that, you know, throughout my career, mentors have been hugely important. They're important, of course, just to sort of give you directions and advice on the work you're doing. They've also been really important for morale reasons, because I think all of you who've done research know that, there's a lot of times when you're really not making progress. And in fact, I had a mentor once who pointed out that the steady state of research is being stuck, because as soon as you actually accomplish something, you just move on to the next thing. And so the steady state is being stuck. So you really need someone who will come along and give you a boost of morale and say, you know, hang in there, you'll get there.
Yeah, especially during, I'm finishing up my own history senior thesis right now on the Scottish Enlightenment. I know that's been absolutely the case for Professor Esterbrook, you know, trying to help me through this difficult time and not having access to the standard lexicon of resources that we normally would have. But,
Amazing.
And, you know, I think we talked a little bit about, you know, mentorship in this in your undergraduate context, but I guess, you know, taking the long run view over your graduate and professorial, eventual career, you know, what is it like, you know, having these mentors, and what is it like now, I guess, being a mentor to others as a professor, as a president, et cetera?
Yeah, so I've been very lucky in my career with the mentors that I had. Professor Norman here at Dartmouth, and then I went, worked at Caltech with one of the great algebraists of the 20th century, Olga Towsky Todd. And then in my postdoctoral work with Richard Stanley, who's one of the noted combinatorialists of the day. So I've been lucky not just because they were such accomplished mathematicians, but because they were such caring mentors and so willing to spend time with me, so willing to sort of understand me as a person, want to get to know me. And you know, that made a huge difference. It sort of influenced me a lot as I became a mentor myself. You know, I made the transition to where I was helping other people. And I always remember what they did for me, and it's guided me as I sort of supervised PhD students, supervised undergraduate research students, and just taught generally.
Absolutely. And switching to a slightly different year, you know, you won several very prestigious awards that have helped support your research over the years, including the Sloan, the Guggenheim, the NSF Presidential Young Investigator Award. Maybe collectively or individually, you know, could you explain the, you know, the impact of these on your research career and I guess the general, you know, I guess the general benefits of having that freedom to research and the flexibility that comes with these things?
Yeah, so I think what they did in their own way was they afforded me time and travel. And so, you know, I think you ask any faculty member what's their most precious resource and they'll say time. And so what these awards did was they allowed me to take sabbaticals, to take extended periods off as a young faculty member, and to travel to where the most expert people in the world were. And so these awards collectively allowed me to take sabbatical years at Oxford and at in Strasbourg and in Paris and in Sweden, and work with some of the noted people who were experts in the particular kinds of problems I was working on. One thing you'll learn about almost all research is that it tends to be a team sport. And so, you know, even if you're not collectively writing something or preparing something, you're definitely going to be consulting with other experts, and they're going to be helping you nurture your ideas. So these awards allowed me the opportunity to spend time with some of the most expert people in the world.
That's something that we've, or at least I've definitely discovered over my time, even as an undergraduate researcher at Dartmouth, is just how important the people are, the social aspect is to all of this. I mean, I think there is probably a misguided interpretation of research being, you know, especially for STEM subjects, you know, being in your lab alone writing.
Right. Yeah, no, it's not like that at all. Yeah. And that wouldn't be much fun, actually, just to.
Right.
Close yourself away and right.
So. Absolutely. And, you know, in the present day, are there any areas of mathematics research that you're particularly excited about right now? And what do you think is going to be, I guess, the next wave of active subfields and, you know, in the next 5, 10, 20 years?
Yeah, so great questions. So as you can imagine, time is my most precious asset right now. And so I will say, being a math professor or being in the professorial ranks, it's the greatest job in the world. I love the teaching. I love the research. I loved every minute of it. I'm doing a different role now, and and I'm contributing in different ways and different important ways. But I really don't have the kind of time I used to devote to my mathematical work. And so, as a result, I've sort of gone back to my roots. I've gone back to the subject areas with my research work and teaching, that the areas that I know the best and have lived over a long period of decades. And so that's algebraic combinatorics and combinatorial representation theory. So that's the kind of work I'm doing right now. And I'm excited. I love the problems I'm working on. It's fun. I'm working with a really interesting group of four people. So we're actively engaged in some really interesting research efforts right now. I am probably at this point too far away from being a full-time mathematician to answer your second question about what are the most important areas. So I will defer to my mathematical colleagues on that question.
Makes sense. And I guess what have been, you've touched on it already, absolutely, in various responses to the questions we've already covered, but if you had to sum it up in a couple sentences, what have been the most rewarding aspects of all of this, of being a professor and a researcher, and I guess, even as an administrator who supports this research in so many fundamental and vital ways over your career?
As I said, being a professor is the best job in the world. And I think one of the things that I remember most distinctly from my undergraduate research, when I was first starting to do research, was two things. First of all, just the inspiration of being the first person to discover something. I mean, that is really, really special. And to know that you've done that. And second, just to know that your intellect is capable of actually seeing things that no one else has seen, to move frontiers that no one else has moved. Just still to the day when I'm successful in a research problem, it's thrilling for those reasons. Teaching is incredibly rewarding in other ways. I think that giving back, helping others, that's really what's most important in life, and that's what you get as a teacher and mentor. But you put those together, and my gosh, being a professor, I can't think of a better profession.
And I think it's all the more true at places like Dartmouth. I mean, it's incredible the amount of academic freedom and just the institutional resources that we have here. And it's really amazing.
And the students we get to work with here, too.
Yeah. I will thank you on behalf of all of our students.
Sure. Give yourself some credit.
As president, I would like to, this is me maybe projecting as an undergraduate myself, but I'd like to think that there are life lessons you can take from research and being a researcher. That's part of the reason I'd imagine it's so compelling for so many talented people. As president, have any of those research lessons translated particularly well during your tenure as leader of a large research institution and a nonprofit enterprise?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the most obvious way that research has helped me is in the academic leadership roles is just an appreciation and understanding of what we do as academics. So that's one big thing. But I think there are more sort of on the ground lessons that research delivers. So one is the value of persistence and determination. because research is not easy, and it's, you know, you're really sort of pushing into places no one has been before, and so that takes some amount of courage, but also, as I said, persistence and determination. I think an appreciation of the complexity of the world, is very much a part of being a president of an institution, but it's also part of being a researcher, as you're trying to grapple with problems as a researcher, which are incredibly complex and multifaceted often, especially, I would put a shout out to people who work in the more humanist or social science areas where people are involved. As soon as people are involved, things are really complicated. So, and then the last thing I'd say is that I've taken away from this is the importance of evidence and logic and reason. That's something that I am constantly reminding myself and constantly reminding my leadership team before we decide on a direction or before we make a decision, make sure we have the evidence to support that and that we're thinking about it in a sort of logical way.
Amazing. And, as we're running short on time here, but I guess to wrap it up, any final thoughts or advice you'd give to Dartmouth students who are thinking about, or who are engaged in research right now, thinking about academia and math or in other fields? And maybe if you were to give a couple of pieces of advice to yourself as an undergraduate in the 70s, what would you say to yourself in that sense?
Yeah, so first of all, you've got an amazing situation by being at Dartmouth. You have faculty who care and want to spend time with you. You've got amazing peers who are bright, engaged, and wanting to make a difference. And so you've got, as I said, an amazing situation. And so if you're thinking about research or thinking about the academy as a career choice, jump in and get your feet wet. Get yourself involved in research. Engage with the faculty, get to know them, understand what their lives are like, understand their paths to where they are, what motivated them, and actually get involved in some work with them. That's what I'd say.
Yeah, and I think that's probably the central, that is the central mission of the Undergraduate Research Association, is to increase awareness and help extend those opportunities to the most number of students that we can. So that's exactly central to what we're doing. Amazing. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be here with us today. It was a pleasure speaking with you, and I think that there are a lot of amazing anecdotes and pieces of advice that people, who are thinking about this stuff or at Dartmouth are really going to take to heart. So thank you again.
Yeah, thanks, Zach, and I look forward to seeing you face-to-face sometime soon, I hope.
Absolutely. Fingers crossed.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.